put up there my title for tonight. A Million Megatons is what I said. I'm going to talk about the impacts of Comet Shoemaker-Levy. Periodic Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 is its full title. Bit of a mouthful. Upon Jupiter, but I'm going to go on to tell you about the possible implications for life here on Earth. I put up my name there. It's Duncan Steele. Please call me Duncan if you want to ask a question. Preferably wait till the end of the talk to ask the questions. So you can shout out. You can say, hey, you. You can say, hey, Duncan. If you really want to attract my attention, you can throw things. But if you're going to throw anything, please throw money. Okay, what I want to start off with this evening is a little riddle which Lewis Carroll posed in The Mad Hatter's Tea Party, in one of the Alice books. He posed the riddle, why is a raven like a writing desk? And it's a riddle which has fascinated people for many years. They knew that Lewis Carroll, real name Charles Ludwig Dodson, was a mathematics don at the University of Oxford. I guess that thousands of pages have been published upon that particular topic. Millions of hours have been spent discussing it. And it's a riddle for which there is no single solution, I guess. But I'm going to pose a different riddle to you this evening. The riddle I'm going to pose to you is, why is a tennis racket like a hole in the ground? I'm going to answer that riddle in a few minutes. Now just watch what I do with this tennis racket. Okay, I'll do it again. Everybody's seen what I did then, but I very much doubt whether anybody here actually truly observed what happened. And I'm going to answer what really did happen and point it out to you in just a few minutes. But think about it for a little while. What we're going to be talking about this evening is a series of impacts which are going to occur upon Jupiter in just a few weeks' time, 5 or 6 weeks. It's going to be by a series of fragments of a comet, as we call it. And if you look up in the dictionary the origin of the word comet, it says it's derived from the ancient Greek for hairy star or hairy one. And if you looked up the meaning or the origin of the word asteroid, it will say that asteroid means star-like. And so they just relate to the way in which they look to us, with our eyes or through a telescope. A comet is hairy. It has these tresses coming out behind it, forming a tail. But an asteroid looks like a star. It's a single pinprick of light. But that doesn't mean that physically they're any different to each other. And one thing I want you to take away with you this evening is the idea that asteroids and comets are basically the same things. And we're gradually converging upon this. We've seen asteroids turn into comets, and we've seen comets turn into asteroids in just the last few years. In fact, the particular train of comets which we're now seeing coming in to impact Jupiter is a good example of that. When it was first discovered, there were 21 separate fragments, 21 separate comets, if you like. But since then, two have disappeared. That doesn't mean to say they're no longer present. It just means that we can no longer see them with a telescope because they're dimmer. And they have essentially, I believe, become asteroids. A comet is bright because you get a great deal of vapor evaporating from it, quite often water, but also other volatile materials. And it's the same as if you put water into a kettle and you set it boiling in your kitchen, and then you go away and you forget about it. You come back again 10 minutes later and the kitchen is full of water vapor. You can't see a damn thing. Because the 1 liter of water, which was almost invisible, has suddenly become this huge cloud reflecting a great deal of light, and that's all that comets are. Comets are just things from which there's a great deal of volatile material evaporating. So comets and asteroids are basically the same thing. And with that in mind, you can interpret this little cartoon which I took from a newspaper. I'll read it out for the people in Lecture Theatre B who probably can't quite see what the writing says. It says, there's Saturn talking to the Earth. He says, sure, Jupiter's the biggest, but I know for a fact that he used asteroids to build up his bulk. Okay. Of course, asteroids is just steroids with an A on the beginning. But the point is that this is exactly what's going to happen in just a few weeks' time. Jupiter is going to build up its bulk when it's hit by a series of comets, or maybe we should call them asteroids. Now, why have I titled this talk this evening, A Million Megatons? Well, let's go through it. It's all pretty simple. There's going to be very little physics in this talk, and I'm sure everybody here will be able to understand the few things I will say. Let's talk about energy equivalence. A very useful fact, a useful thing to remember, is that at a speed of 3 kilometers per second, that's a high speed, compare it to the speed you go in a car, 3 kilometers per second, any mass, no matter what it is, how inert it is, a lump of lead or a feather, okay, any mass has a kinetic energy, energy of motion, equivalent to the explosive energy of the same mass of TNT. Okay, so a piece of lead the size of your fist, let's say 1 kilogram in mass, you accelerate it up to 3 kilometers per second. When it hits whatever it hits, it releases energy equivalent to a stick of dynamite of the same mass, 1 kilogram. That's at 3 kilometers per second. However, kinetic energy rises as the square of the velocity. That is, if you double the velocity, the kinetic energy goes up by a factor of 4. And if you put it up by a factor of 10, then the kinetic energy goes up by a factor of 100. So it's got much more energy than if it's made of pure TNT. In fact, these impacts upon Jupiter will occur at 60 kilometers per second. 60 is 20 times 3, and so we square up 20, it gives us 400. It means that a 1 kilogram mass hitting Jupiter at that speed, 60 kilometers per second, will release an explosion as much energy as 400 kilograms of TNT, which is one hell of a stick of dynamite. Now, in fact, the sticks of dynamite are rather bigger than this. I've said here, okay, the fragments of this comet, which I'll tell you the correct pronunciation of now, periodic comet Shoemaker-Levy 9. Okay, it's not Levy, it's not Levi, and they're not called Shoemaker, okay? It's also, that P there is astronomer's shorthand for periodic comet. So every newspaper report which tells you it's called Comet Shoemaker-Levy is incorrect. There are about a dozen comets called Comet Shoemaker-Levy. None of them is this object. Okay, the objects which come through the solar system, which we discover, which are non-periodic, they come through once, off they go, we don't see them again. Those are things which we call comet blah, blah, blah. Comet Halley, its correct name is periodic comet Halley. Now, why do we call this object periodic? It's because it's entrapped in orbit around the Sun and around Jupiter. Why is the 9 there? It's because the team that discovered it, the Shoemakers and David Levy, have previously discovered 8 separate comets. For all the members of the female sex in the audience, I mustn't say girls, I mustn't say women, all the members of the female sex in the audience, the Shoemaker who actually found this thing, first of all, was Caroline Shoemaker. She discovered this object, and she's discovered another couple this year, which brings her up to 31, if I remember correctly, in terms of total comet discoveries. She is rapidly closing upon Jean-Louis Pons, a French astronomer who discovered 33 comets in the first 30 years of the 19th century. So within 6 months to a year, the world record holder for comet discoveries will be Caroline Shoemaker. There's no doubt about that, the rate she's going. Okay, look, how big are these individual fragments? The answer is, well, we don't really know. Our guess is that the largest ones may be as big as 4 kilometers across, but let's take it as being 2 kilometers as a kind of conservative estimate. A 2 kilometer fragment has a mass of about 3 billion tons. Okay, it's a huge mass. And so we can work out its energy. It's 400 times 3 billion tons. And if you work that out, it comes out to be 1 million megatons. Now, how much is 1 million megatons? Now, take into account that the mega means million in itself. It means 1 million million tons of TNT. That is a gigantic explosion. How do we compare it to anything else? Well, the obvious answer is nuclear weapons. Let's compare it to the largest nuclear weapon ever let off, which was 67 megatons. It's 15,000 times the largest nuclear weapon mankind has ever tested. Now, this is going to be a big bang in anybody's language. There's going to be a whole string of them. It isn't going to be one. It isn't all going to be over and done within a few minutes or one night. They're going to go on for 7 or 8 days as something like 28 separate fragments plummet in to Jupiter during just, as I say, 7 or 8 days. Now, we could say to ourselves, what would happen if the same thing happened to the Earth? The answer is, there will be a big hole in the ground. I started off by saying to you, what is this riddle? Why is a tennis racket like a hole in the ground? And the answer is that mankind has seen these holes in the ground for decades, centuries. We've looked at the moon through telescopes, and when you look at the moon, we'll be seeing a picture of the moon in just a minute. You see lots and lots of craters. And if you look back through the history books, you'll find that astronomers and others have argued about those craters for many, many years. Even in 1979, I went to a specific lunar science conference in which a geologist stood up and said that he believed the craters of the moon were due to volcanoes, not impacts. If you take a look around the world, there are lots of impact craters, and they mean that the Earth has been hit in the past, and yet mankind, through its scientists and other people, have denied that those are due to impacts, because if you accept that they're due to impacts, all of a sudden you realize, hey, that could happen again. And if that could happen again, and that sort of explosion occurs, we're in big trouble. So we've actually been seeing these things happen, but we haven't truly observed what they mean. And that's all to do with the tennis racket. Watch what happens again. Okay, now still people haven't probably actually recognised what's happening when I do that, and it isn't anything to do with sleight of hand. And just to make it clear, I put a bit of tape on there. Okay, the tape is upwards, now watch. The tape is downwards. The tape is upwards, and the tape is downwards. And it happens every single time, and it's nothing to do with the way I'm throwing that up in the air. And you can go away and you can do it yourself. You can do it with a squash racket. There's nothing special about that tennis racket. You can do it with a fork or a spoon which you're using, eating dinner. If you flip it up in the air at that time, for every single twist it does that way, it does a half twist that way. And it's all to do with physics. I could stand up here and I could lecture you for the next hour about the relative values of the moments of inertia, about the different spin axes of this, and you'd go away understanding why that happens. But that's not what you've all come along to hear about, so I'm not going to say anything more. But the point is that you saw me doing it, but you didn't observe what actually happened. But now I've told you, you can't forget. You're never going to be able to watch Stefan Edberg playing Pat Cash again without thinking about the bloody tennis racket. And we've got to do the same for these holes in the ground. Still, people don't believe or don't recognise what they actually mean. Still, you'll take lessons in evolution or you read books and it says that Darwin was right. Darwin was wrong. Darwin thought about gradual changes upon the earth, this gradual evolution, what we call gradualism. The correct scientific term is substantive uniformitarianism, which is a hell of a mouthful, but it's this gradual evolution of species. But that isn't what's happened to the earth. What's happened to the earth has been similar to the soldier's definition of war, which is long periods of boredom interspersed by short, sharp periods of intense terror. And that's the way that evolution goes forward. It's what we now call punctuated equilibrium. Nothing changes very much, and then all of a sudden, kablam, the dinosaurs disappear, and up come the mammals, and here we all are all this evening. But it isn't just in biology. It equally well applies to geology. Last night, I was giving this same talk in Christchurch in New Zealand, and I had a very good example to give to them of this occurring. In New Zealand, if you went to a geology lecture, they would have told you until a couple of years ago that the Southern Alps are gradually rising and they gradually erode away. And Mount Cook decreases its height by 1 millimetre a year on average due to the fact that gradually it's being eroded away. Well, 2 years ago, all of a sudden, they saw something different. 200 metres fell off the top of Mount Cook. That's the way that geology proceeds. It isn't due to gradual changes. The course of a river is not defined by its gradual flow year after year. It's defined by the once every century or every thousand year gigantic flood which cuts a new path. And that's what we call catastrophism. And that is different to uniformitarianism, which says that everything plods along the same way. That isn't the way things occur. Generally, the way in which things change are due to catastrophes. And the worst catastrophe you can imagine is if the Earth got hit by an asteroid or a comet.